Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. So, Sarah, this week on the Paleo View, we're shaking it up yet again and going back to our favorite forum of Chit Chat Show, otherwise known as The Lazy Show.
Right. Was it just last week we're like, hey, it's our first real show in months, months, and months. This is what we're really like. And now it's like.
And everybody was like, yay, so it's a Sarah real show. Sorry, that's all you get for the month.
That's right. Now back to laziness.
But this week, we're super excited to be able to chit-chat with some of our friends in the paleo community who are running businesses the right way. And we wanted to kind of have a chit-chatty show with these beacons of hope for the community and for everyone around in terms of being able to bring a realistic way of life with an ancestral approach for everybody. And I'm super excited to have Sarah and Pete of Pete's Paleo to the show. Hey, guys.
Hi.
And we also have Simone from Zen Belly on the line. Hello, Simone.
Hi.
You guys are all West Coasters, and we're East Coasters. And we were talking before the show started that Sarah's a bit punchy from traveling. And Monday nights, I always strongman. Like, I literally get home 10 minutes before we turn on the podcast. And it's like 5 o'clock where you are, but it's 8 o'clock where we are. So this will be an interesting show.
You guys are winding down, and I have 2 cups of coffee in front of me.
Oh, gosh. So before we do like formal introductions and stuff, I bit my tongue long enough and I hadn't posted on Instagram. So nobody knows. You guys are the first people I'm telling. Honestly, I haven't even talked to Matt because I came in the door and just came downstairs. I had a huge PR in my deadlift today. My last deadlift, like off the ground, just straight up deadlift was 295. And today I hit 315. So excited.
Wow. That is beast mode. That is awesome. Club.
I am. And not just like a little bit. Like I pulled.
Oh, yeah. You're significantly.
Yeah. We did 305 thinking like I wanted to be in the 300 club, but over it, you know, and I hit 305 and it went up pretty easy. And I was like, I'm totally throwing more weight on that bar.
Oh, yeah.
So excited.
That's badass.
That's
good
awesome.
For you.
Yeah. It's so much fun when you hit those like markers and goals and to hit it like by that much, 20 pound PR, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Super excited. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Sorry, everybody, but I'm just a little bit like floating on cloud 9. Had to get that out into the universe because it's not real until, you know, I put it on the podcast and post the Instagram video. Like didn't actually happen.
I got over 200 pounds finally on my clean and jerk. Like 3 weeks ago.
Nice.
And as soon as the bar went down, all the manliness was over because I jumped up and down and was twirling in the
did
air.
Did you squeal?
I squealed. And I was like, any and all manliness of the weight that you just moved is gone.
Well, I can say that I was pretty manly about my response. Like I held it up and smiled at the top of the deadlift so that I could get a screen capture. And then I slammed the bar down and yelled some expletives. So
it's not a good deadlift unless there's a few profanities.
Yes.
Thrown around.
Yes, exactly. So, for those people who are listening and who don't do this sort of thing, a deadlift is just picking something up off the ground and standing up with it. Like I didn't actually move my arms and lift that weight up anywhere, but still 315 pounds is super exciting. And that was my goal for when I did the competition, what was that, like 6 weeks ago? And I hit 295, which was pretty close to my goal, but not quite. So I'm super stoked to be well over it. Anyway, moving on. So Sarah and Pete, you guys were just talking. I'll give a kind of little intro, and maybe you guys could tell us a little bit about yourself, and Sarah could tell the world like the special thing that she has going on that's interesting. So Sarah and Pete, I was actually introduced to you guys through the Balanced Bites podcast. I think we actually might have met in person first, and I didn't put much together, maybe at the royal wedding. Is that where we met?
You know what? I think the first time we met was at Paleo Effects last year, but it was just like we had dinner together with like that huge crew.
Okay.
And like, I think that was pretty much it. And then, yeah, then we actually...
That was a little overwhelming. That was like our first time meeting like everybody.
And the dinner was like run poorly. So we were all just like, why is this taking 2 hours?
Yeah.
But the first time, I think we officially met at the royal wedding.
The Paleo Royal Wedding.
Hashtag Paleo Royal Wedding.
That would be Bill and Haley of Primal Palette for those people not following hashtags. and so I met you guys and found out that you, I think at the time, were just starting to launch your nationwide shipping of quality foods. And interestingly enough, we have since employed... someone that Pete went to culinary school with, Katie, of Honestly Delicious, actually is a team member of ours. She's our lead assistant. And it's just, what a small world, you know, that you guys like went to culinary school. Yeah. You guys went to culinary school and then you're both ending up kind of in the paleo sphere. And so you guys can be found at Pete's Paleo. You do nationwide shipping of quality source foods. I want to talk more later about what that means, quality source foods. And you also have your cookbook coming out, I think, in the fall, late summer, right?
Yeah, it should be, by the time the copies come, like the end of June.
June, yeah.
End of June, beginning of July.
It's going to print, like, next week.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So you guys are in that not sleeping phase right now.
Right. Yeah, it's really fun. We have... So two people you're probably very familiar with, Stacey, Aaron and Arish, and I have spent a lot of time on the phone and email, and it's almost done, though. It's almost done. But yeah, we sent the final PDF off 3 days ago, and then it's just been like small changes back and forth since then, but we're pretty much there.
I think we're like... alluding to what you were saying earlier, I think we're going to have two babies in June.
Woo! Woo.
Yeah, so we will have a daughter here sometime around the summer solstice. That's when she's due. And after the phone call today, it seems like the book should be out probably the same week.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Wow, cool.
I remember Sarah seeing you at PaleoFX this year, and... adorable. Okay, don't take this the wrong way. But every time I saw you, I'd turn to someone and be like, thank God I'm not pregnant. oh my goodness. Like, more power to you. Traveling, like finishing a book, doing all that kind of stuff, and, you know, holding your belly as you walked at the same time. I was like, kudos to Sarah. She's got it going on.
Well, we were talking about that, you and I, on Facebook, like even a couple months ago. And of course, now it's like, exponentially worse. I mean, better. I mean, really, just worse. Let's be honest. I mean, I think I have like 7 weeks left with all my fingers and toes crossed right now. And, you know, I get what you're saying. I don't like argue with that at all. And this is my first kid, so I'm with you.
So also I want, Pete, for you to tell a little bit about your personal story and how you went from chef to paleo chef. Cause when I heard that on the Balanced Bites show, I thought it was a phenomenal kind of, success story and how that contributed to influencing the way that you approach your business, which I think is really cool. And we're going to talk about later, but before we do that, I want to introduce our other guest on the show, Simone from Zen Belly. Welcome to Paleo View again. You also have a book coming out this fall called The Zen Belly Cookbook, correct?
I do, yep, in August.
Awesome. And you run a catering business out of the San Francisco area, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. So I know I had your food at the Nom Nom Paleo book release party, and I've seen you do a bunch of other, I think maybe you did Danielle's as well. I didn't go to that one, but I know that you specifically focus on gluten-free for people, but you're also paleo-friendly for those that want it. So right. I think that's awesome, and we can talk more about how you make that work in a functional environment a little bit later. But how are you doing? What do you got going on? Because your book comes out about a little bit later, right? So you're probably like trying to finish it up?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm almost done. I just turned in the last round of edits before going to the design part of it. And I'm finishing up the photography. The photography should all be done by now, but really I had a little bit of a camera issue 2 weeks before my initial manuscript was due. So I had to get a new camera, which set me back a little bit as far as learning how to use it. That was not the most convenient thing. So they gave me a little bit of extra time with the photography. So I'm finishing that up. So I basically have, you should see my chalkboard. It's just basically tons of food words and what I still have to take ingredients photos of, because I do two pictures for each recipe.
Which is so cool, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I love doing that. It's sort of like the only art I feel like I really do, but it's fun. Yeah, so I'm trying to keep myself organized, and I should be finishing that up this week. And luckily, I'm not too busy with catering the next couple of weeks, which is great, because it's hard to do all of it at once.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I had something really smart to say, but I lost it. Maybe Sarah, do you have something smart to say? My Sarah, not Pete's Sarah.
I always have something smart to say. I don't know if it's relevant, though. No, I don't have anything. Okay, so in all fairness, I am a bit of a zombie today from my whirlwind cross-country trip to San Francisco. I spent almost as much time traveling as I did in San Francisco. So I'm kind of just enjoying, it's like listening to my podcast without me on it.
All right. Well, then how about this? It would be really helpful for our listeners, because I think Sarah too was like, what is the show we're doing? But like, so, and give her a little break. And for me personally, I was really excited to have you guys on the show because, I think the entire community has seen a lot of paleo business growing. And I think that there's some negative to that, right? Like, it comes with the business of being a, you know, capitalist-based country where, you know, we all have to make money. But at the same time, there's a lot of really good that comes with that, because when we started paleo, tomorrow is our 4-year anniversary. So when this airs,
happy anniversary.
Thank you. So when this airs, it will have been over 4 years since we've been paleo. And when we started, there was nothing on the market. Like Rob Wolf's book wasn't even out yet. So for me to see where the community has come in 4 years in terms of, if we wanted clean jerky, Pete's Paleo, not Pete's Paleo. You guys don't do jerky. You might do jerky. I meant paleo kits. Steve's original paleo kits, yeah. I think, might have been just starting, but they were still like a very small nonprofit out of New Jersey. And I only knew about them because Liz Wolf from Cave Girl Eats, now Real Food Liz, was an ambassador for them. Like, that was pretty much the only paleo product that I knew about. And so if we wanted clean jerky, if we wanted dried fruit, not done in canola oil and not done with sugar, if we wanted anything like that, we had to make it ourselves, and we had to just make like everything from scratch. And I think there's some good to that, right? Like there were a lot less baked goods and those kinds of things if you don't have a box mix to do it from. But at the same time, this is how we, in my opinion, make it accessible for people and can integrate this as a lifestyle for most of America, and we can sell it as something that's not unreasonable for busy people to do when we allow and support businesses within the community to do things the right way and support them. And yes, it can cost more money, but it also doesn't need to be used as often. It can be a really nice augment or supplement to the regular paleo lifestyle that people are living, and then utilize those services or goods when we're ready for them. So,
and for some people, that can make or break their ability to do paleo.
For sure.
I mean, it's it's also, there's, you know, for some people, that's why they can't, because they don't have those conveniences, those, you know, ready-made foods that they can rely on. And it's not so much an issue of how much those foods cost, but they're just their plain old availability and the fact that they save so much time. So I think there's, you know, a huge group of people out there who are actually finding paleo because of all of these new food-centered paleo businesses that are popping up all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started the business, or first when we first did our first paleo challenge or 30-day challenge, was right around 4 years ago. We started the company like 2.5 years ago, but 4 years ago was our first challenge, our first dip into it. And
2 weeks into dating, might I add.
2 weeks into dating. We were like, hey, let's stop drinking and and do this really strict diet together.
Well, that was either to make it work or make it really obvious it wasn't going to work really quickly.
Yeah.
We're all in.
And so at first I was like, oh, like no risotto and no gnocchi and no, I mean, what am I going to do? And I went on the website and looked up all the rules, and I was like, oh, I was like, really good protein, really good local vegetables. I was like, this is just fine dining with just a couple of the things that I can't use anymore. And so I went to the farmer's market and like just got every vegetable I had never cooked before. I got everything that I just hadn't tried in a while and made it. And that was how we got through the month, was me trying like really unique things. And everyone at our gym was like, wait, we've been eating steamed broccoli and grilled chicken all month. Is there any chance that you can make more of that? And, you know, the idea for the business was kind of born there, you know, providing that convenience for people. But absolutely, I think that for most people, if you tell them, listen, unless you can cook everything yourself and unless you, you know, don't ever go out to eat, then you can't do paleo, then they're just going to say, okay, well, then I can't do paleo. And they're going to go on to the next thing, you know?
Well, I think even like, Stacy, to your point when you started this topic, like paleo is obviously exploding, and from both sides, like from the business side, it's like the trendy marketing type thing to just grab onto and say your product is. And then from the consumer side, I think we're seeing a lot more awareness for it. But also you still have your naysayers of, oh, well, that's about a diet, and so it's not for me, as opposed to if it were maybe even just called real food. Like I think you were mentioning the direction Liz is going in. It's like, okay, that makes it maybe a little more accessible because people are always scared of their limitations and restrictions and all this kind of stuff. But our personal goal for Pete's Paleo is just trying to like educate people about why it's beneficial for them personally, for the environment, for the economy, for a whole host of things to eat this way. And yeah, we prefer for you to cook at home, but
since you're not, or if you don't know any better, it's a great vehicle to get them in the door.
Yeah. Like to Sarah's point, like for people who just don't have the time, we're here for you. But it's always best to kind of know exactly what ingredients are going into what you're making and having it at home and doing it with the kids and just having your own little take on it.
Well, I think it's a great point that Pete made, that when he figured out what paleo was, he thought, oh, it's fine dining without risotto and pasta. Like, I think that's a kind of genius take on paleo that we should sell more, you know?
Like, well, that's, I mean, it's quality. Like when at the restaurant it was, okay, you got to know the farmer. You got to know what the pigs ate. You got to know, you know, what the farmers are growing. And that's what writes the menu. Like, I can't tell you how many times we had a menu written, and then the farmer showed up and he's like, oh, I sold all the asparagus, but I got a ton of, you know, kohlrabi. And it's like, okay, well, then that's what is going to go on the menu because that's what the farmer brought. And that is paleo. Paleo is eating stuff that's around when it's around from the best source possible. And in turn, a lot of, you know, I was joking like with someone that, you know, Michael Pollan kind of seems to be having a hard time with, you know, paleo and some of the stuff that I think he misinterprets it to be. And like, you want to like grab him and be like, dude, I'm getting Bo Hunter, conservative guy from Idaho that's a CrossFitter at the same table as you. Like, you would never have talked to that audience. And we're talking to that audience. And we're having the same conversation. We're just using a slightly different vocabulary. And, you know, and that's how you get stuff on a bigger scale, when you have more people, you know, buying the right products from the right places, is how, you know, prices go down and that kind of stuff.
So this is one of the questions that I'm kind of curious about is, Pete, you said making sure that businesses are buying the right things from the right places. And I think what would be really beneficial for our listeners who aren't in California or can't afford or aren't interested in kind of completely buying pre-made meals, what can you recommend to them from kind of your experience that you guys have all seen and can recognize from the business side, as to what is good questions that you can ask businesses to see if they're ethically sourcing quality ingredients, local, you know, whether it be, you know, organic or not, but just in general, what are some of the things that they can look for? And I would say, and in addition to that, what are some of the things to really avoid? And for example, if something is really low cost compared to some of the other things that you're looking for, it's probably for a reason and you might want to ask more questions. Like, are there more things that you can think about from that perspective that could help people find, you know, high quality vendors, businesses in their local area that they can support, as well as, you know, alleviate some of the burdens that they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think Simone would probably agree with me on this, that like, if you're in California and if you're a chef or if you're a food person that like cares about what they eat, like, you have no excuse. Like, there is so literally, but like, when I talk to some of the Native Americans that I meet with for some of the other stuff we do for Pete's Paleo, and they're like in North Dakota, and they're like, yeah, it's 45 minutes to the Piggly Wiggly, and it's the Piggly Wiggly when we get there. Like, those people have, you know, a legitimately tough time getting good sourced ingredients. And I think the biggest thing that you have to look for is when you go to the sources page of like a website, or when you call them, if it says anything like, we use organic ingredients whenever possible, or we strive to use the best ingredients. Like, that means that gives them the out to, yeah, but this time we couldn't do it. And so actually 80% of our menu is non-organic and 80% of it's commodity, you know, protein, because we did say that we try on the menu, but we didn't promise anything. You want to look for the places that say it's organic. We only use organic produce. We only use pastured animals, because if they say anywhere on there that we use it when available, like, that word when available is like the word beverage underneath coconut milk. It opens up the door for literally any amount of everything else.
So what would be like questions, you know, that people could ask, like, their local butcher shop or their local farmer's market or things like that to, and if they don't have access to that, then it's like what you're talking about, like, really reading the ingredients panel.
Yeah, I found a lot of, especially in California, I don't know if they do this up in San Francisco, Simone, but you'll go to the farmer's markets and you'll, once you recognize what's actually growing and what's actually in season, you'll notice that about half of the purveyors there are just selling produce that they bought from a produce market, like from a big produce market in LA or something, and are just selling it at a farmer's market like it's the product that they grew.
Right.
And yeah. So you just, yeah. And you're like, hey man, what's going on? You start talking to them and they're like, they don't have any answers for you. A real farmer will like open up, he'll very excitedly tell you what's growing. Like, I found garlic or arugula blossoms the last time I was at the farmer's market, and I just had lived my whole life without having arugula blossoms. And this farmer like extolled the virtues of them for 10 minutes to me, and they were amazing. And I had no doubt after the conversation that person grew the food. But I think if you just go to the market and have a genuine conversation with someone, you'll learn right away whether or not they're doing a good job. I think the questions you want to look for is, what are the cows fed? What are the animals fed? And If it's pastured, they'll tell you it's pastured, and they'll be very proud of it. If it's anything other than that, they'll say, well, you know, we try to pasture them, but sometimes we have to supplement. You know, look for the word supplement. That means that they get fed grain. That's always what it means. And I think that's, you know, kind of the best advice I have.
And with the produce vendors also, I've found that just because the organic certification is so expensive and sometimes not possible for the first few years that they're in business, it takes a long time to get. There's a ton of farmers that grow everything completely organically, and they'll tell you exactly how they do it. And you'll pretty much be able to tell, sort of like Pete's saying, if they actually grew this food or if they picked it up at some other market and are just selling it marked up a little bit. But I think that's a great way to sort of save some money too, is the certified organic vendors. While of course we want to support them, if you're trying to get by with spending a little bit less at the market, purchasing stuff from farmers who grow everything organically but aren't necessarily certified yet, I think is a great way to go and to support them also.
That's a really good point. There is a I completely forgot about that. Like Primeval Gardens is a garden where we buy literally everything that they grow for Pete's Paleo, and she's not certified organic because she's the wife of a seal that has raised beds that she takes care of when he's gone for something to do. And it's turned into her giving us all of the stuff that she makes. She's organic. I know she's organic. She pulls turnips out of the ground and brings it to our kitchen the next day, but she just doesn't have the certification. And I'm really glad that we get to give her the money and that I have the relationship with her, as opposed to, you know, her spending thousands of dollars going down the path of organic certification.
Right. Yeah. I know my farmer is the same way, that people that I get most of my stuff from, and it's, I have no doubt. I mean, their stuff isn't even, it's so, it looks like stuff that someone grew in their backyard. It's not all perfectly beautiful and all exactly uniform. And I found enough bugs in it to know that it's not working.
Right. Yeah.
I love finding bugs in produce.
The spiders crawling across the cutting board.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's organic.
Yep.
But that's another good point. Like when the produce isn't all exactly uniform and perfect looking, like ready for the grocery store shelves, then you can get it less expensive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get
often.
People were so conditioned to think that everything comes in a perfect package and it's a 12 count and this is the size of every apple and every piece of steak. And it's like so not like that in real life. And we get such a huge deal on organic produce because I'll take odd sizes. I got Brussels sprouts at half the price of what everybody else pays because I don't care what size they are. So a lot of the reason why things are really expensive in this country is because we only use, you know, the things that look pretty to us, or the thing that the food companies have, you know, deigned look pretty.
That kind of leads into the second part of that, which I think you guys are articulated what Sarah and I would have said about farmers markets and finding produce and meat vendors and farmers. We've actually had Joel on the show before, Joel Salatin from Polyface Farms, talking about giving your farmers an inquisition. So if people are interested in more on that, you can, there'll be links in the show notes. Monica can put in a reference to that interview with Joel Salatin. But I think, you know, more than that, there's also the other side of the coin that we're seeing a lot more now with paleocentric businesses with more of a product type sell. So I would even categorize both of your businesses in kind of a gray area of that, right? There's the actual products that you guys are selling, which is food. You're also selling services, obviously. But then there are the bars that you can buy on the shelves in store. And, you know, sitting next to an Epic bar can be something. Have you guys seen the one that's like primal something, but it's actually vegan jerky? Have you seen that?
Oh my God.
No, but I saw one at the gas station like a month ago, and it said Caveman Bar, and it said paleo friendly. And I turned it over, and the ingredients were, the first four ingredients were like puffed rice, brown rice syrup, coconut syrup, and something else, but it was like a sugar. So the first four ingredients were three kinds of sugar and rice.
So I think you just kind of answered my question, which is you got to read the ingredients, right? Because, sure. I mean,
there's
even
a lot more products out now that are being marketed to the paleo community that are not paleo by any description.
No. And you know,
they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, my 8-year-old is, it's so awesome to see the world through his eyes because he's old enough to read and he's old enough to know what the rules are, but he is still naive to where he hasn't been jaded and accustomed to the way that the world works.
Oh, Mom, I figured it out. Everyone's lying to me all the time.
Exactly, right? So we go to the grocery store and he is so cutely innocent and he'll see a box of something on a shelf and it'll say, I think it was those caveman bars that you're talking about. And you know, and he'll look on the front and it says caveman and then it'll say paleo friendly and he'll get really excited like, oh, Mom, look, a new thing for us to try. And I'm like, sure, anything we put in the cart, we have to read the ingredients. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Every single thing we put in the cart, we have to read the ingredients. And sometimes the ingredients aren't clean paleo, but we have a conversation about like, well, do you think that's healthy? Is that your treat for the week? Because usually the boys are allowed to pick like one thing from the store that's not strict paleo, that's like their, you know, thing or whatever. And so he goes to read the back of the package, and like you, he's like, rice, brown rice syrup, sugar. And by the time he gets to the fourth, he's like, this is all junk. And he is like infuriated. He feels so lied to, and he looks at me with like these puppy dog eyes, and he's like, Mommy, how could they put paleo in the box? And so I think it's that sentiment is a lot of what people who are new coming to paleo haven't yet learned, which is that, you know, unlike the word organic, unlike the word, I don't even know, even gluten-free has like some sort of...
Just passed the regulation.
Right. There's some sort of regulation and requirement for it, right? There is nothing for paleo. And so for a lot of people coming to this, let's say within the last even 6 months maybe, where there's been a boom of product availability, you know, these people could be genuinely not knowing and purchasing these products thinking that they're doing great for their health. Meanwhile, they're being completely swindled by companies who, like Sarah said, are just jumping on the bandwagon for the paleo label because that's what's hot and sells right now. But then
even just to add to that, like if they purchase something that they think is paleo and they don't have good reaction, like their body doesn't react good to it, or they're not seeing the results they want, then they're going to blame paleo when in fact the thing wasn't actually paleo to begin with.
Very true. So, I mean, other than saying to everyone,
read labels,
read labels. I mean, do you guys have any other words of wisdom that you've kind of picked up watching this happen over the last, you know, year or whatever? Like for me, there are certain companies that I know are legitimate paleo companies. You know, I can name Your Businesses, I can name Steve's Original, I can name Epic, I can name Eating Evolved. I'm missing like a bazillion companies right now, but I know who the owners of those companies are. I know what their ethics are. And I can say, for the most part, I can trust that the things coming out from these people are going to be paleo-friendly. And of course, I'm going to read it the first time and make sure. But that, for the most part, I know that those people have an interest in making high-quality food that legitimately is made with products that work within the framework of our lifestyle. Do you guys see a lot of that, both not just on the bars and label, but also kind of on the business service side that you work on or anywhere else? And any words of wisdom for people on that?
Simone?
I think reading the labels is definitely the biggest thing. And always, I mean, whatever's on the front of the package is pretty much just think of it as decoration. Don't pay any attention to anything else on the front of the package, because that's where they're just trying to sell you. And definitely look at the ingredients. And I mean, even if the ingredients are all technically paleo, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something you want to eat. I mean, if it has 30 ingredients and it winds up being mostly sugar in the end, I would want people to keep that in mind too. not that I never eat sweets or anything by any means, but just as far as everyone sort of being aware of their own personal goals. And yeah, I'm not really sure what else as far as, I mean, anything that's packaged, you really just have to look at what's in it and make your own decision. Like Stacey, how you're saying it might not be 100% paleo, but you can sort of decide with your own, you know, big brain, what if it's okay for you anyway. And then definitely being aware that paleo is a buzzword right now and primal is a buzzword right now. And just because something says paleo or primal definitely doesn't mean that it is. And there's the other one, other than those caveman bars, there's something called primal strips. And that's basically vegan jerky. And it looks
like... Yeah, that's
like
the one I was talking about too. Jerky. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I feel like those have been around for a while. I'm not even sure if those are there because they're jumping on the primal bandwagon or because they're appealing to the vegan population that really wants to be eating meat and feel like a cave person. I'm not sure. But
All of them, you know,
I picked those up sort of excited and looked at them and it was like, I think they're like seitan or something, which is pretty much the extreme, the polar opposite of paleo.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. And then they have like a mannequin that's not, that's exactly the same thing. It's gross.
So it seems to me that like there's two kind of like dividing kind of directions that like paleo seems to be going. And it's made it, it's really just the two different kinds of people. It's the people that want like a quick fix, that promise themselves to lose 15 pounds every year and do the South Beach diet and do the Atkins diet. And now they're going to do the paleo diet. And because, God, they need a break from Weight Watchers because that doesn't work either. And they're going to buy the paleo shakes and the paleo bars and whatever, and it'll be a passing fancy for them. And then there's a much more serious approach and tenable approach, which is people learning like, hey, this is about our food system and about how it's not sustainable the way that we eat anymore and that we're all becoming really, really sick eating like this. And on top of that, it's making the environment really, really sick. And I want to feel better and I want my kids to grow up in a world where they can eat, you know, clean, healthy food. And eating paleo is about that. And it's, you know, a whole life approach to going, you know, making time to go to Strongman and making time to go for your bicycle rides or runs or whatever it is for you. And really like changing your worldview or your life view to a much more positive, you know, long-term outlook that does involve, you know, making time to cook and making time to learn to cook and reading new cookbooks and, you know, really, you know, going to farmers markets and buying vegetables. And it's not an easy thing. It's going from a life of convenience and being really sick to a life of, you know, putting in work to get good results. You know, I told a guy, someone was asking me at the gym yesterday, like, oh man, how long have you been CrossFitting? I want to, you know, I want to be able to do what you can do or look like you do. And I'm like, ah, 2 years. 2 years. Oh, no way, man. like that's, I was 215 pounds. I was 50 pounds more than I weigh now. And it took me almost 10 minutes to run a mile. Like it took 2 years to fix that and fix my heart and fix, you know, it took that long to get that right. But now I'll have it for the rest of my life. And that's what people don't realize is that like, oh, it might take you a couple of years to learn how to cook for yourself and learn how to take care of yourself and learn what, you know, good fitness is. But then you'll have that for the rest of your life.
Which I know, will be what better investment
a long, healthy making? Life as opposed to this, like, every year I'm just going to try the new thing. And so it's frustrating to see the way that, you know, people are being taken advantage of, but that's going to happen no matter what. And the people that really want to see the benefits of it are the people that are going to put in the work.
So, Pete, I forgot to... I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sarah, but it's okay. We can either come back to it or I would love for you to share your story with people about your heart, about your transformation. And I think it's a phenomenal reflection to kind of quantify it in terms of it's been a 2 year investment. For me, I had a 28 year investment on becoming the most unhealthy I ever was, right? Like every year it got worse and worse. And I got to the point where I had to have Matt help me up the stairs during my pregnancy with Wesley because I literally couldn't support my own body weight. And I was exhausted and had to eat dinner on the sofa because I didn't even have the energy to sit at the dinner table. And, you know, people ask me all the time about my transformation and how long it took. And I say I lost the majority of my weight in the first year, and then I had kind of the health transformation in the second and third year as I focused more on nutrient density. And then this last year has been about fitness for me. And so I explain it like this has been a journey for me, and it's, you know, there are phases and it takes a long time, but it's amazing how much better and healthier I am now 4 years later. And they get quite a lot of people. For the majority of people are really inspired by that, and they want to go on their own journey, and they want to be able to have that transformation. But like you said, there's the people that just kind of get cross-eyed, and they're like, no, man, just give me the pill. Just give me the shake, you know? So maybe, I don't know what Sarah was about to say, but I don't want to lose the opportunity to hear about your health transformation, because I think it's one of the phenomenal ones in paleo that needs to be shared more often, because of the nature of your health before you found this.
Well, it's kind of funny. You probably have a better perspective on the transformation than most people other than my wife, since you employ Katie. And she knew me when I was in culinary school. And I was a bit of a maniac for quite a while. You know, I just have always had a really good palate, and I've always loved working in restaurants. And, you know, I started in front of the house and was a bartender and a server. And then I learned about wine and, you know, then went into culinary school. But if you've read any like Anthony Bourdain's books or, you know, anything like that, the going out all the time, the really intense lifestyle was my life. And when I met Sarah, you know, I just was kind of content, like, I'm just going to be a bartender or a chef, like, the rest of my life. I'm never going to make very much money. Like, that's just kind of how it's going to be, and I'm just going to be really unhealthy. And a month after we met, right after we had finished, or I think a few months after we had finished our first paleo challenge, we, as soon as the challenge was over, I went right back to, like, burgers and bourbon and Taco Bell. And one night I woke up and I had 102 degree fever, and every time my heart beat, it felt like someone was stabbing me in the chest. And Sarah, I was with Sarah, and she's like, "Are you okay?" And you know, I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I just need some Gatorade and some Tylenol." I like left at like 4 a.m. And fortunately, my mommy was in town on business, so I went right to her hotel, and as any grown man would do when he's in pain, and went to the hospital, and I had pericarditis. And essentially, I had so much heartburn and so much inflammation on the inside of my body that the sac around my heart had become inflamed and swollen, and it was squeezing my heart shut. And they basically had to give me an emergency round of steroids so that it stopped squeezing my heart shut. And then I met with a cardiologist afterwards, and he said, "This is going to happen to you for the rest of your life. It's going to happen again within 10 years, and then after that, it'll just happen in a shorter and shorter intervals, and it'll just keep happening because you're going to have scar tissue, and this is the damage that you've done." Fast forward a few years to starting Pete's Paleo, working out for a year and a half, and going into my yearly echocardiogram, and they thought I was the wrong patient. And they said, "I thought you said you had pericarditis, and that's why you're here." I said, "Yeah, I had it, you know, 2.5 years ago." Well, they had two different techs look at it, and then they had the radiologist come in, and I have no scar tissue, and I have the resting heart rate of a triathlete. And they asked me all these different questions and finally figured out that I was the right person. And then after another 20 minutes of questions, they finally said, so what do you eat and what's your workout?" And I said, "I do CrossFit and I eat paleo." "Oh, okay, that makes sense."
I think that doctor has our Pete's Paleo flyers in his waiting room, too.
He has the Pete's Paleo flyers in his waiting room now. And so a couple things there. One, I fixed my heart with paleo and with working out. Two, the cardiologist.
No big deal.
Right.
I fixed my heart with paleo and working out. No big deal.
That's like a side note, because a lot of times I feel like people are sick and they're like, "Well, there's nothing else I can do. I'm already sick." But like, I think everyone on this podcast can attest to the fact that you can reverse things and fix things just by changing your eating habits and your lifestyle, which is what I think a lot of people don't realize.
But what blew me away about the whole experience was that it was literally the last thing that they could think of to ask me to figure out what had happened about was my diet and my exercise routine. So when we talk about like what's out there on labels and what commercial interests are doing to take advantage of the paleo thing, like it's an ignorance across the board, whether you're talking about doctors or food manufacturers or whoever, that they always go for the shortest, simplest, / most profitable route. It's just how we've done things for the past 60 years in this country. The problem is we're running out of places to, crap on, so to speak, and, ability to kind of keep doing that. We've had to change the name of adult onset diabetes to type 2 diabetes because 11-year-olds kept getting it. We're not going to change the diet. We're not going to change the food system. We'll just change the name of the diabetes. That's kind of been our approach. But fortunately, I think with movements like paleo, I think that's starting to finally change.
That's an awesome story.
It really is.
Yeah, the guy, when he was, 2 years, man, no way. That affects my heart, dude.
People really do want the quick fix. That's why all those businesses are still in business. All the diet businesses. It's always a billion-dollar industry because people want January 1st, they want to fix themselves by February 1st, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I was going to say something really smart about if you're going to live like 80 years, 2 years is a quick fix. And then I thought about a month and I was like, yeah, that would be awesome.
The great thing about paleo though, for most of us, and Pete, I think your story is a really good example, is that you went on a paleo challenge, you felt great. Then you had burgers and bourbon and you felt really not great. And I think for a lot of people, well, at least I hope, and I think the reason that we can all say that the movement is booming at the rate that it is because even if people come to paleo for diet purposes, I think a lot of people stay for health. I think Sarah and I probably have a pretty unique audience as opposed to most other people's audiences because we have a very family-centric approach. And Sarah and I both are very much about real and sustainability, and we're kind of, not the typical
paleo police.
That's a good one. I was also trying not to insult you. I was, because I don't mind talking badly about myself, but I was like, we're not the typical lean, CrossFitting, paleo perfectionist type people. So I think in general, we draw a crowd that is very different. We draw a crowd that is largely mothers and families who are interested in doing this because their children have allergies or they have autoimmune disease or in general they're just sick of being sick and they want to fix it, and so I think we have a really awesome audience. I know Sarah and I both feel this way. Like, we love our audience way more than some of the other audiences that we see on other paleo pages that can be really, over the top or whatever. And I think, but for those people and those other audiences that come to it, like, I want to do this for a month so that I can look good for bikini season. A lot of those people end up after a month being like, hey, my allergies went away and I'm no longer getting headaches and I'm not tired at 3 o'clock anymore. And then they figure out that it's working for them and they stick with it, And I think that's the power of paleo, so to speak, is that even if people come to it from that like diet perspective, the results kind of speak for themselves long term, or at least I hope they do.
I think I'm going to guess, but Simone, with your catering business, you can probably attest that we basically have this same order pattern, and it's really comical where, January 1st it starts and it's through the roof. Everybody is on their 30-day challenges and everyone is doing, I'm going to make it happen. And then that basically stays through all the way through Valentine's Day because you got to look good for your significant other, or you got to look good to get a significant other. So people kind of stay on that kick all the way through, and then that's pretty much it. And then we'll have our orders, we'll drop off, until after Easter, where everyone just kind of gorges themselves and like they have the first holiday kind of meals of the year. And then people all of a sudden at the same time realize that, oh, it's bikini season or it's swimsuit season, and our orders pick back up again. And then, you know, but over time, it continually grows. So there are those peaks and valleys of, you know, the diet spikes and things like that, and the summer, you know, swimsuit spike. But over time, over the, you know, the years that we've been in business, our business is growing. So like you said, you get them in the door for a diet or for a 30-day challenge. But over time, the people that really see the right benefits, you know, stay.
So we're running out of time for the podcast, but there was one thing that I really wanted us to talk about. And Pete, this goes back to what you were saying before you shared your personal story about companies that are producing food sort of for the paleo movement sort of falling under these two banners, and sort of people within the movement falling under these two banners. And there's sort of like the, you know, shakes and bars and the products that we can't even call paleo because they aren't, but they're just using it as a marketing scheme, versus those companies that are, you know, sourcing quality local ingredients and, you know, really working hard to put out a really great product. And I think we're seeing more and more of these companies try and get off the ground. And I was hoping we could maybe have a discussion about what we can do and what our listeners can do, what the paleo community as a whole can do to support these, you know, entrepreneurs who are, you know, putting a lot of effort and energy into creating a really great product.
I mean, other than buying Simone and our book?
It's an excellent start.
All of our books.
All of our books.
Go ahead, you mean Simone. People who want to start a paleo business or people who want to support them?
Let's talk about both of those sides. Let's talk about both of those. Let's talk about, okay, so you know, when people are starting businesses, they are sometimes they're just launching it on their own and trying to get word of mouth out. Sometimes they're trying to raise money through a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo campaign. You know, sometimes they're, you know, it's like it's a food truck where it's, and they're trying to expand to a restaurant. You know, there's a lot of actually really innovative business models within the paleo community. And so, you know, I guess we could just talk about, you know, there's patronage, which is clearly beneficial, you know, and actually, you know, buying these high quality products. But I was hoping we could maybe talk about some of the, you know, other things that people can do to support them, you know, talk about them, word of mouth, send their friends.
So you mean other than Instagramming my almond milk latte whenever I find it?
I do.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I think that this community, especially of, you know, the paleo bloggers or those that have a voice in this community, are extremely supportive. And just because we're all so passionate about this lifestyle and what it can do for people, that I feel like whenever any of us kind of see the next big thing coming down the line, it's all about promotion and just word of mouth of saying like, yeah, let me support you on my Instagram. Let me support you on my blog. Let me pull you on the podcast, because we have a voice and people, for whatever reason, listen to us. And so if we can help support any of these up and coming companies that are, like you said, doing it right, I think that this community, more so than others that I've seen, are extremely supportive of each other.
I would say that, you know, if you're going to start a paleo business, do it right. The market is there. Forever before, in the past 50 years of food, you had to sell cheap food because everybody was selling cheap food, because everything that everybody was buying was subsidized. Now people know that a good carton of eggs costs $6 to $8. That's what it costs to get an egg that ate bugs instead of corn and lived outside of a 1x1 cage. And they're okay with that because they put a higher value on their health than they do on their budget. You know, we used to spend 30% of our income on food, and now we spend like 7% of our income on food. But that's starting to change. People are realizing that things cost more for the better product. So if you're going to start one of these businesses, get an Excel spreadsheet out and figure out what you have to charge for whatever product you're making to use the best ingredients, to make no compromises, to have to make no defenses of what you're making, and then make that your price. And people will pay it. Don't start at a compromised position. Don't say, oh, I feel like people would pay $7 for this, not $9, so I'm going to use soybean oil instead of avocado oil.
I think that's such a good point. I had the same conversation from the awesome couple that run Eating Evolved. You guys have met them, right? You met them at PaleoFX, yeah. Because I was talking to them about the fact that they had to phase out their truffles. And, I mean, their bars are amazing, and I love their chocolate. But at holiday times, I always bought their truffles. Like, at Valentine's, I bought them for my team at work, and I bought them for the boys. And at Christmas time, I do the same thing. And I was telling them, I'm like, I really am genuinely going to miss your truffles. Like, what can I do to get your truffles back? And they were explaining to me that they had switched to a higher grade of chocolate, and that when they did the cost analysis, that the price that would have to go into place in order for them to make their truffles would be, I don't know, like 25% higher. And they were like, we just didn't feel like, you know, we could support that price increase. And I was like, well, you should just charge more. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I would happily pay 25% more if I could still have paleo truffles. And they were like, really? And I'm like, yes, really. Like, I love the paleo truffles at holidays. I love giving them as gifts. And I think I may have talked them into bringing around like a limited amount at a higher price during peak sales times, because I think it's exactly what you're speaking to. Like, there are people like me who are willing to pay more for what it is they want at the higher quality. Like, I'm not going to ever buy a box of Russell Stover for anybody that I care about. Like, I'm not, but I love being able to share, you know, Eating Evolved truffles or whatever it is. Like, you know, hold me bars, taking pictures on Instagram. Like, I don't mind feeding Epic to my kids. Here it is, you know, like, and I think it's really helpful for people to see, like, I think Sarah was alluding to about bloggers sharing that, but I think more so for the people who kind of aren't bloggers and don't have access to that. I think some of the interesting things that I've seen that I wish I had been a part of, because I didn't really get into supporting Kickstarters and Indiegogo and those sort of things a long time ago. But as a result of those projects that came out like 2 years ago before I really knew what they were, there were things like Exobar that came out that was funded through, was it a Kickstarter, Sarah?
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter.
And like, I totally didn't participate in that, but thank goodness that enough people did that those Exobars were created with cricket flour, because it's genius and awesome. And I brought like 1,000 people over to their table at PaleoFX and made everybody try them, because I was just like, can you believe it's crickets? It's genius. It's crickets. I'm autoimmune protocol. I cannot have egg. I cannot have whey. I can't have those proteins. And I need a bar. Like, I need a convenience food when I'm going after work and working out at 7 p.m. And so for me, it's super exciting to have like a legitimate form of protein and carbohydrate that I can consume and not have to worry about it compromising my health. And I think like I've gotten on board with the whole me one. I'm super excited that they're branching out, and I supported the Paleo Mayo one. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I've been getting like monthly updates about he's having a hard time sourcing the quality eggs, and he's like sending out the emails as he's like going about his trying to create a paleo friendly shelf stable mayonnaise. How super exciting is that? So I think like for the people who are trying to figure out how to support the businesses, Simone, you have any other ideas?
Well, the Kickstarters and Indiegogo campaigns are really great. And often it's not just like you're making a donation. I mean, you're getting something because there's reward. So you're getting a jar of mayo once it comes out, and you're also helping this company get off the ground. So it's, you know, sort of killing two birds, and you're just sort of paying for something in advance. And then, I mean, if people can support the businesses, I say just do it, and realize that I think the great thing about this community is that because we all have to cook so much from scratch, if there's a convenience food that we can actually have, and like you were saying, if it's more expensive, you'll pay 25% more for a truffle than you were. I think we're all so grateful to be able to, you know, find something that we can eat that's convenient, that we can take on a plane or, you know, have after work before we go work out. So I think it's a great sort of market because people will pay a little bit more for those convenience foods because it's really the only option. And it's so great when you see a company that actually does it right and sources the ingredients properly and makes the food properly and doesn't cut corners and use fillers. And so I think a lot of people in this community are so thrilled when a product like that comes out. So it's still not saturated, even though there's so many great products out there.
Yeah. The market's never saturated. Like I think it was at 2 years ago at PaleoFX, the grocer there, the local grocer, he owns 40 stores in Texas and each store does like a little over $2 million a year. So almost $100 million in sales. And he is 1/40th of Whole Foods, and Whole Foods is 1/10th of Target. And all of those are crushed by Walmart. So the majority of people are still not even aware that organic is out there. That's organic still only represents 5% of the market. So we still have a long way to go, and there's, you know, there's plenty of opportunity out there. You know, it's just a matter of continuing to demand, you know, like Simone said, like demand the best and make sure that, you know, they have the best ingredients, the best quality and all that stuff.
Yeah. So we're, and share it with, oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I mean, within the community, I feel like we're sort of all preaching to the choir with all the great products out there. But I think, you know, sharing all that stuff with your family and friends, just because of what Pete's saying, where so many people aren't even aware of these things. I mean, buy 3 Epic Bars instead of 1 and give one to your, you know, family or friends who can't even imagine eating anything other than a power bar.
That is a good idea.
Yeah,
or that's just how you support the company and spread the word. That's a great idea.
A lot of people do that with books too, right? When there's like a book that they love and it's half price on Amazon or in Costco or something, you know, those make really great gifts. You know, you're supporting the community and you're encouraging someone else to be healthy. But I had a question, Simone, for because you specifically targeted either originally or still kind of as a gluten-free friendly catering company, how would you suggest people, because I, for one, when it was my vow renewal, here, 2 years ago, I looked high and low. I searched every internet site and source I could possibly think of to try to find a paleo-friendly catering service. And in particular, I wanted to find someone who could bake grain-free. Like, I wanted a cupcake tower because we never had a wedding. So I don't know if you guys know this, but we did like a huge 10-year vow renewal as basically a wedding that we never had. And so I looked everywhere for caterers who, I didn't even need them to be like exclusively gluten-free or paleo, but I needed them to know what the word gluten-free meant. And I wanted to find someone who could bake things grain-free that knew kind of what they were doing and could follow a recipe if I gave them one. And I couldn't find any. Like, I literally gave up and was going to make everything myself, which is, as you can imagine, insane. Yeah. And then weeks before the event, I got contacted by a local company who makes meals like Pete's Paleo here in the DC area called Power Supply. The chef for Power Supply emailed me and said, I don't remember if she said she'd heard I was looking or what the deal was, but she was like, if you need something, I also do catering services and I cook paleo all the time. And I also run this bakery called Out of the Box Bakery, and we do grain-free baking. She was like, I don't call it paleo because I use agave, but it's grain-free baking and I can totally make you cupcakes or whatever you want for your wedding. And I mean, I literally, it blew my mind because I had been looking for so long and couldn't find anything. And then this person heard word of mouth that a paleo blogger was looking for a catering company and contacted me. But for the normal person, they would never have found something. So do you have like words of wisdom or tips for how people could find that sort of service if that's something that they're looking for and they're not in San Francisco or whatever the case may be.
Right. If they can't hire me.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and even in San Francisco, I'm pretty sure I'm the only exclusively gluten-free caterer in the area.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I know.
But good for you. Awesome for you.
Good for you, though. Good for now.
I mean, I can only cater one event at a time, so I sort right. of, yeah, there was someone I could refer people to, but I'm actually planning my own wedding, and I was sort of horrified at the prospect of looking for a caterer because I'm getting married in Connecticut, where my family lives. And if I was getting married here, I at least have enough connections. And the chef that I rent a kitchen from recently was so excited that he was starting a paleo diet. And, you know, so I think a lot of chefs are, it's easy to find chefs that are into it because, like Pete said at the very beginning of this podcast, when you think like a chef, paleo is so easy because it's just using really good ingredients. It's not restrictive. It's any chef would be so excited to get a basket full of great paleo ingredients. So that's really not that tricky. It's just about all the little things that they might not think of, like the giant buckets of canola oil that they get from Restaurant Depot that they use for everything because it's so cheap, and that's what's in their fryers, and that's what they use for everything, and there's big buckets of flour everywhere. And so it's about the little details, I think, that you have to talk to people more about. But I was actually pleasantly surprised being looking through the list of caterers in Connecticut. Every single one that I contacted was completely willing to do a completely gluten-free menu. And I think as long as you talk to people and you explain to them what cannot be in the food and be really specific about it, because people just don't know. I mean, you have to tell them about the soy sauce and the, you know, any kind of mixed anything that isn't made from scratch. And I think if you maybe don't use the words gluten-free and paleo as much as saying, these are the ingredients I want to use, I really want to focus on good quality meats that are grass-fed, eggs that were raised by, eggs that were pastured, produce that was grown organically, and you want to focus on a real farm-to-table style. That's a great word to use because that usually means yeah. mostly meat and vegetables, and that's something that people are familiar with. It's not saying, you know, paleo, and people hear paleo, and that's, you know, they have all sorts of misconceptions about it. But, you know, saying that you want to focus on farm-to-table, saying that you have food allergies that you need to work around, and anyone in the food industry is completely aware of food allergies. And once you say food allergy, people pay attention. And of course, since it is a trendy thing right now with people being gluten-free when they don't necessarily have to be, which of course I'm supportive of everyone being gluten-free, whether or not they have an actual reaction to it, because it's not good for anyone. But just because so many people are going into restaurants and saying, I'm celiac because they don't want to get gluten. You know, the people behind the scenes are like, well, we know that 75% of the people in this restaurant aren't celiac. It's just not statistically.
I am. They don't take me seriously, but I like look at the waiter. I'm like, no, seriously, my mom can go into anaphylactic shock. Please don't get me gluten. And they're like, okay. Right.
Yeah. And that's people who actually do have an allergy aren't taken seriously. But any quality restaurant, I mean, they will take you seriously. And I know when I have anyone that I'm catering for that has an allergy beyond gluten, because there's no gluten in my food anywhere. But if someone has a nut or a fish allergy, I'm, you know, paranoid careful, because I, no one wants that. No one wants to yeah. hurt anyone, and no one wants to have that, you know, on their conscience that someone had to like stab themselves with an EpiPen and go to the emergency room. I mean, that's not the goal of any chef or server. So I think just making it really clear what you, you know, are okay with working with, and still being really appreciative that they're being accommodating, I think, is important in a restaurant or in a catering type of situation, is really important.
Yeah, we don't ever want to hurt anybody. And the tickets that come back that have the most red ink on them, that are the most like modified, are the ones that we may like make a joke to each other about, like, oh, look at this particular person, you know, using some other not kind words. It'll be the best plate that we put out all night. It'll be because we'll know that this person cares what they eat. And when you go to like a caterer, they're used to just doing everything per the client's request as is. And I like a lot what someone said about not even saying that's paleo. Just say, hey, I have a gluten allergy, and like the fats that you cook with are really important, and all this stuff's really important to me. I know that it's going to be more expensive, but that's okay. And right. If you just say that walking in, like, I know it's going to be more expensive, but that's okay, then the caterer will relax and know that they're dealing with someone that they want to deal with and that isn't going to freak out when they give them, like, an expensive price, you know, per plate based on what they requested. They want to make you happy. They just want you to, you know, give them a check with a smile on your face, basically. And they'll do anything that they can to make that happen. And if you just explain, like, hey, I can't have this, this, or this, then they'll make a menu around that. And then afterwards you can say, hey, by the way, that's paleo. So if anyone ever asked you to make paleo, you know how to do it now. And that was delicious. And that was delicious. Thank you. You're welcome.
You can add that to your recipe.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome. It's like, we got to kind of like back people into this, you know, for in any way that you can. It's like, if I'm talking to a conservative, I'm like, can you believe the way the government's been telling us to eat since they came out with that food pyramid? And if I talk to a liberal, I say, can you believe what Monsanto does and all the lobbying power they have? Like, it's both kind of right. And it's not, the point is, I'm just trying to get you to open up your mind. And however I do that, as long as I get you at the table, then I win.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I just want to extrapolate on something that you said about being picky in a restaurant. And then you were talking about being explanatory with ordering a catering menu. I would say it's the same thing for people who order in restaurants. I think Sarah and I have mentioned this before, but like one of the things that we say to waiters when we go into a restaurant right away is I, in advance, say, I'm really sorry, I'm high maintenance, but I tip well. And I kind of break the ice. And then when I start asking questions about nightshades and gluten and corn and all the things that like I cannot have with a 10-foot pole, then it's like, whatever, they know that I'm reasonable, I'm not going to get angry, and also that they're not going to be, you know, shortchanged at the end of the night or whatever if they have to give me extra service. So I totally am on board with that, and I think for even if you're not planning a big catering event, that sort of philosophy can apply to the everyday kind of businesses that you're supporting.
I always tell people, like, you know, when I was joking with Sarah, like, you know, like the When Harry Met Sally thing, like the way that she orders, I want this on the side, I want this separate, I want this. People a lot of times have an aversion to being that guy or that gal. Like, I don't want to be, you know, it's your life. It's your heart. It's your money. You tell them exactly what you want. They're in the hospitality industry. They should be hospitable about it and make you exactly what you want. If they don't, then they're in the wrong business and you're in the wrong restaurant.
Right. And I think also as far as being in the wrong restaurant, I think knowing where you are is really important. I mean, yeah, there's only – not every restaurant you can walk into and say, okay, well, I see you have all these – you know, you can order off the menu to a point, but you can't just create your own thing at any restaurant. Yeah. So I think being able to –
Sir, you're at Arby's.
Yeah, exactly.
Want gluten-free barbecue sauce. Sort
of scaled with what you see on the menu and what you can pick and choose, and maybe ordering more sides than a full meal, and being able to recognize what you need to ask questions about is really important too. And yeah, I mean, knowing where you are. We were in a little cafe in Austin, we were in Paleo FX, and I got a little worried with the group of women I was with. I mean, the questions that they were asking were just, they were completely reasonable, but our waitress was not accommodating at all. And I had to remind them at one point, I said, you guys, she's going to be alone with our food. Like, we need to take it down a notch. You know? Are the chickpeas organic? What kind of oil is the mayo made with? And, you know, just questions that are completely reasonable. But after there was an eye roll after the first question, I was like, can we just order the salads with meat on it and be done with it and just not ask all these questions? And
yeah, there's definitely something to be said for taking into account, like, the complete indifference of the 20-year-old that's waiting on you and kind of right. realizing, like, oh, maybe this person isn't going to go the extra mile and I need to order the medium burger and just get out of here.
You right.
know, the bunless burger and just go.
Yeah. Exactly. Cool.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us on the show and chit-chatting in a completely spastic manner about all this. But also, more than that, thank you guys for being a quality source of paleo businesses in the community that people can trust for goods and services and food and all that jazz. So just as a reminder, they can find Pete's Paleo at petespaleo.com, and Pete and Sarah's cookbook's coming out in the fall. It's Paleo by Season. Is that correct, Pete?
Nailed it.
Awesome. And then you can find Simone at zenbelly.com. She has a catering service based out of San Francisco and also a cookbook coming out in the fall as well. Anything else you guys want to add or that I forgot to mention?
If you haven't tried our food out before and you want to give it a try, you can go to petespaleo.com and enter the coupon code ThePaleoView in all lowercase letters, and you'll get 5% off your first order.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming.
We know how busy it is when you're wrapping up books, because Sarah and I are both wrapping up our cookbooks as well. I don't know how Arish ever sleeps, but
I don't think he does.
I know. Wrapping up all four of our cookbooks all at the same time.
I'm just happy. I know mine has the latest publishing date, which means he's going to be calling me much later. So I'm totally fine.
I got design documents back on Friday, Stacey.
Yeah?
No, they're good. They're good.
Good.
Yeah. I'm pickier this time.
Because you know now.
I know now. Well, and also I got the design for the recipes. I was like, if there's even one little thing on here that I don't love, I have to see that on 300 pages. As opposed to if there's one little thing on here I don't like, it's just that page. Because every page was different for the first book, whereas the second book, you know, it's a cookbook.
Yep.
So, yeah. So I made my list of requests. And I said, please.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Sarah and I are going to go get some rest. And
we're going to go get some dinner.
You guys go enjoy the rest of your evening.
Adapt to the Eastern time zone again.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
And I actually literally was dozing off at a part there in the podcast. So,
oh, Sarah.